Welcome to Onc Live On Air. In today's episode, we spoke with Shubham Pant, MD, MBBS, and Professor Timothy Elliott about ongoing research with cancer vaccines. In our exclusive interview, Drs. Pant and Elliott discussed the current landscape of vaccines for cancer treatment, ongoing research seeking to extend the benefits of vaccines as cancer management and prevention strategies, and what the future may hold.
What would you say is like the current landscape of vaccines and cancer treatment? Which agents have made the biggest impact in which disease settings, and kind of what patient populations are these affected in?
Vaccines are truly coming to the fore now for cancer treatments. So, you know, one is on one extreme is, you know, vaccines for something like melanoma. In melanoma, the cancer is very susceptible to vaccine, even in the, let's say, advanced setting. But what I'm really working on is how do we look at the vaccine in the earlier settings. So for an example, in pancreatic cancer, even after resection and after adjuvant treatment, that means they've finished all the adjuvant therapy for early stage pancreatic cancer, those patients still have a high chance of the cancer coming back in spite of everything that we do. So what we're trying to do in that part is trying to develop vaccines to target micrometastatic disease. That means trying to truly delay the recurrence or go towards a higher cure rate in these patients to make them truly curable. So I think that's where we can have the most impact with patients. Because when you have stage four disease, yes, we do see some patients potentially have a great impact with immunotherapy, you know, potentially with vaccines. However, I think if we can delay or even, you know, prevent relapse for any patient who has a high risk of relapse, I think that could be really where the vaccine development could be going.
After a long time gaining some traction, the idea of therapeutic cancer vaccines is starting to gain some support, I think, now. Some really exciting experimental trials are rolling out in operable melanoma. I've seen a fantastic trial in GBM, in renal cancer. So some of these are otherwise pretty hard to treat cancers and have been thought of as being fairly immunologically silent before, but it's clearly possible to generate immune responses to them that seem to be effective. So very positive recently, you know, this is in the past couple of years, there have been some very high profile papers published from BioNTech, from MSK, again, and Moderna, of course. The setting tends to be in late stage disease, in combination with checkpoint blockade, so current standard of care, and the target antigens tend to be personalized. So it's pretty high tech. So these are vaccines that are based on the sequence of a patient's individual tumor. So you got to turn around a diagnostic biopsy that's also processed for sequencing and turn around a personalized vaccine, you know, within a reasonable interval of time. So technologically, it's absolutely phenomenal. Yeah, it's kind of, it really is science fiction, some of it. So that's where I'd say that's where we are at the moment. You know, that is the cutting edge. And just this is a launch off. What we're trying to do is extend that now to off-the-shelf vaccines to use in individuals who have not yet had a cancer diagnosis, but are at high risk. And so it's sort of taking us out of that therapeutic setting into, you know, much more generalized setting, which is very exciting. There's no one really doing that at the moment.
Now we'll dive into kind of the pancreatic stuff here. We'll start with the Amplify trial here. Can you just explain how that vaccine works and kind of if it has any unique design features?
Yes. So the Amplify vaccine is a very unique vaccine. So the one that we tested that was presented in ASCO and published in Nature Medicine, that's a peptide vaccine. So just like, you know, you have other vaccines, kind of it's got the protein, just like a peptide vaccine. However, the interesting thing is it hitchhikes to albumin the way the construct is done. It's called an Amplifile platform. And that what that means is when you give the vaccine, it hitchhikes on albumin in your body. And that albumin takes it, you know, you travel with it just like you would have a car, right? Think about the albumin as a car, the, you know, peptide vaccine as a hitchhiker kind of gets into the car. The albumin takes the peptide vaccine to the lymph nodes and presents it to the lymph nodes. And we think you can get a more robust immune response that way. So it's a very, it's a unique construct. So the one study that we did, which we published, was for patients with KRAS G12D mutation delta and KRAS G12R mutation. So those two different mutations. We tested it in resected pancreatic or colorectal cancer patients, which had a high risk of recurrence. And what we defined as a high risk of recurrence was if you were circulating tumor DNA positive, that means if you're MRD positive, or if your tumor marker was going up, whatever tumor markers we followed, CA19-9 or CEA for pancreatic colorectal, you know, that's when we gave this vaccine to these patients.
What did you guys see, and what is the potential clinical impact of the data?
We saw very interesting things. First, you know, this was a phase one study, so for safety and tolerability, so it was safe and tolerable to give, even in escalating doses. The main side effects we saw was a rash or like a, you know, local reaction at the site of the injection that we can see, but that was, you know, that could be, that was easily controlled with just some local therapy. What we saw was that there was a percentage of patients who got a, something called a T-cell response. So we kind of followed them out for immune responses. So they got a T-cell response. And interestingly, actually, majority of the patients did get a T-cell response. The median T-cell response from baseline was about 12x. So when we looked at it, the median T-cell response was about 12x. And when we further looked at the data, the patients who had a more than a median response, immune response, they tended to do the best. They, their recurrence-free survival was not reached by the time we reported the study. We're still following these patients out. But the ones who had a lower than median T-cell response, they tended to relapse fairly early. So what that tells us is if you get that T-cell response, that could be very significant for the patients to try to prevent the recurrence of this disease.
What are some like unanswered questions that are still kind of being teased out in this space?
Yeah, the unanswered questions are, again, this was a phase one trial, small study. So we did another study. This was with two peptides, right? KRAS G12D and R. But now we have a 7-peptide vaccine versus multiple targets. So it covers most of the KRAS mutations. And pancreatic cancer, 90% have KRAS mutations. So first was increasing the peptides, right? Adding more peptides to the original construct. So that was done with a 7-peptide vaccine. And we just finished the phase two trial, which is a 2-to-1 randomization of the vaccine versus, you know, just standard of care, which is just watchful waiting. And those results hopefully will, you know, come out. The trial has been accrued and we're just waiting for the events for us to report out the trial. But I think that's very exciting. Obviously, you know, like I said, approximately 50% of these patients did get the T-cell response and they did well. We want to make sure we raise that number up. And it's being done by various factors. We have something called a booster that we add to the vaccine. And again, just increasing the dose of the peptide vaccine, maybe that'll help. So what we're trying to do is get a higher immune response in most of our patients, which can potentially help in prevent the recurrence. So I think that's where the science is going toward.
So now we'll kind of get into the LungVax program here. And you kind of just touched on this, but if you want to just give us any relevant background for the program, kind of what the goals are and what the mechanism of action of this vaccine is going to be.
Sure. Yeah. So this came about after a huge amount of background research from our collaborators at University College London and the Crick Institute, who have been studying tumor evolution, lung tumor evolution. So how, as over time, how the genetic makeup of lung cancers changes as the tumor develops. And what they were able to do is to identify so-called driver mutations that were carried by, so these are genetic mutations that are involved in the tumorigenic process that were shared by all cells in an individual's tumor. Just a bit of an aside, as a tumor evolves, yeah, as you can imagine, it generates new mutations as it goes. So not all cells in the tumor are alike. You know, some have a constellation of mutations that might have evolved along a different branch. Others, yeah, and they're spatially separate in a single tumor. But there are a subset of those mutations that are shared between all cells in a tumor. And what's more, they tend to be shared by different individuals. So all lung cancers have a subset of these mutations. So we call these shared neoepitopes. So they're very different to the personal neoepitopes that are being targeted in the BioNTech and the Moderna clinical trials. So what we've done is formulated these shared neoepitopes into a vaccine. And we're using the adenoviral platform that Oxford developed during the pandemic for SARS-CoV-19. And that was, you know, that was a prompt for us getting together, that we had the vaccinology expertise. I'm a cancer immunologist interested in T-cell immunity. And so the UCL group got in touch with us to see whether we partner with them to develop this vaccines. And it's been a really exciting, fast-moving and really enjoyable collaboration between the two groups. We managed to, you know, raise the funding for the vaccine development, the preclinical work, and the manufacture of a batch of clinical grade vaccine, you know, within two years, well, pretty much 18 months once we got the money in. We are fortunate in Oxford in that we have a small biomanufacturing facility. So this was what really allowed Oxford to take the lead in designing and developing a vaccine to SARS-CoV-19. You know, we could make clinical grade vaccine locally. It's a research facility that will give us, you know, sort of up to 5,000 doses of an experimental vaccine. And that really kind of supercharged the whole process. So we've kind of just piggybacked on that success, used exactly the same facility, uses sort of a next generation. It's called a ChAdOx. So we've deployed ChAdOx 2, which is the version 2 of the one that was used in the pandemic, encoded these shared neoepitopes, and we've manufactured now 500 doses. So we can do, it's a small toxicity trial, small phase 1 trial, but we've built into that clinical trial some pretty complex experimental endpoints, that so we can measure you know, responses at very high resolution in the samples that we'll be getting back from the vaccinees. We're going to kick that off. We've just got funding for the experimental trial, which is great. It's all systems go. We're expecting to open the trial before the year's out, and we expect to vaccinate our first patient in Q1 of next year. So let me tell you a little bit about the population that we're targeting. So the background here is that doing these prevention trials is really difficult. And that's why, you know, pharma's hasn't really invested in them, because it's really difficult to get a clinical readout. You know, I know how to do it. We've made calculations for populations with a very high risk of developing a particular cancer. So just give you some idea, for a population with a 50% risk in 2 years of developing a cancer, so, you know, very, very high, we'd still need an experimental population of about 300 per arm. So, you know, significant size trial. So what we're doing is targeting a population of individuals who have had curative surgery for an early diagnosed lung cancer, stage 1A. And those individuals are at very high risk of developing either a new cancer or a recurring cancer, sometimes not even in the same location. So, you know, so they're about as close to, you know, spontaneous new cancers as we can get, while at the same time know that we're targeting a very high risk population. So we'll be recruiting those individuals to the phase 1 trial with a view to sort of extending the same trial into a larger phase 2 scenario if the data is looking good in stage 1. The phase 2 will also be in this population, I think. But ultimately, we'd like to be vaccinating healthy individuals or individuals who haven't had a cancer diagnosis, but at high risk. And so we'll be capitalizing on the lung health check program that's just rolled out in the UK, similar to many worldwide. There are targeted screening programs where you get a phone call from your general practitioner or your health center to say that you're at high risk. We see that you're a lifetime smoker, you've hit the age 55, and you're overweight, or you've got a high blood pressure or whatever. We think you should have a low-dose CT scan because you're at risk of developing lung cancer. So there are CT machines that rock up in malls and shopping centers all over the country, where you make an appointment, you go in there, have your scan, and you're then sort of classified into no problem. And that's about, that's the vast majority. An intermediate population, about 10%, might have a nodule or some kind of irregularity in the CT scan. So they go onto sort of high alert and are called in on a yearly basis. And then there's another 5 or 10% that score positive, and these go into a rapid diagnosis pathway in a hospital or tertiary referral center for it's a pathological diagnosis for a biopsy, and then a treatment if necessary. And about 4% of those people who come into the program actually end up with a stage one diagnosis. And these people are way prior to any kind of clinical, otherwise clinical signs. They probably wouldn't come on the clinical radar for another 5 or 10 years. So we're catching these very, very early. So it's a fantastic prevention program. But it's also a great population to target now with a vaccine. So we can take the, very high, intermediate, and then ultimately, sort of population risk populations to try out vaccines on. So that's a big, sort of fairly comprehensive picture of what we're aiming to do in LungVax. And we have a portfolio of other cancers that where we think we can, target these high-risk populations too.
Yeah. You mentioned other cancers. So now I'm kind of curious, what other ones are you guys working on this type of technology for?
There is an inherited form of colorectal cancer called Lynch syndrome. So that's an inherited defect in genes that normally repair DNA. And if those genes are defective, then mutations can accumulate in a kind of a predictable way. And so Lynch syndrome, so-called carriers, are at a very high, 80% lifetime risk of developing colorectal cancer with an inflection again in middle age. So we are hoping to develop vaccines. We're actually not the only group that are doing this, but we think that we can anticipate which antigens will start to be made in healthy carriers very, very early on in life. And what we're working on at the moment is showing that those antigens manifest in the very earliest detectable lesions. They're so-called aberrant crypt foci. The normal population, you and I, are sort of generating these all the time, but most of them sort of disappear. In the Lynch population, they're at a much higher risk of developing then into polyps and then on into cancers. So it's a great population to target for prevention. That's going to be our next challenge. And then further down the line, there will be non-Lynch syndrome colorectal cancer. So we think we will have a vaccine there that we could apply to a much wider population, if only we could identify those that are at high risk in order to do the clinical trial. So third or fourth population are individuals with a known inherited mutation in BRCA1. So primarily, breast and ovarian cancers there. principle is exactly the same. But if we can identify very early lesions, people at high risk, we can match those with antigens that we can put into a vaccine and use those in healthy. They have been called pre-cancer patients, but of course, that's not the right terminology. Healthy individuals at high risk who have not yet had a diagnosis.
What would you say the future kind of holds for cancer vaccine development in general? Where do you see these agents kind of fitting in the future? And are there any other ongoing studies that you kind of have your eye on or excited about?
Yeah, so for GI malignancies, it's an exciting time. I think where they will really have an impact in these patients who are resected. You've resected pancreatic cancer, colorectal cancer, potentially for the patients who are high risk. That means they are lymph node positive, ctDNA positive. But it could work in pancreatic for majority of the patients, because majority of patients are high risk by definition of pancreatic cancer. So I think that's where when they can kill the micrometastatic disease, that's where we can have the maximum impact, right? Because if you can truly make it work, we're going towards curing these patients where that might not have been achievable before. That's where we are looking forward. As far as others, there's a personalized vaccine from BioNTech for pancreatic cancer. That's undergoing accrual. I think that's exciting. And then there, other also peptide vaccines which have been developed for pancreatic and colon cancer. So I think the field is, it's a great movement for our patients. So we can offer them more options, hopefully in the future.
I feel the future is precision prevention, rather than therapeutic. I'm sure that vaccines will find their place in a therapeutic regimen, either to complement other immunotherapies like checkpoint blockade, maybe therefore mitigating some of the toxicities of checkpoint blockade, boosting responses to so-called, cold or checkpoint refractory tumors. I think that vaccines will have a role in therapy. But yeah, for me, it has to be precision prevention. If you just look at the demographics of the cancer burden over the next 50 years, we just are not going to be able to train enough oncologists to deal with the increased number over the next 50 years, let alone the sort of, the economic and morbidity burden that's going to impose on a population. So I think it's cancer researchers, I think that we're duty bound to focus more and more on prevention and interception wherever we possibly can. So linking, but that thinking to early detection, sort of taking early detection is a great way of reducing incident sort of mortality, but taking that one step further and trying to bring down incidents is really what we should be thinking about.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.